Welcome to Leaders and Legends of Online Learning, a podcast dedicated to the experts. Thank you for listening. Each episode, we'll be learning from the world's leading thinkers and practitioners in online learning and linking to ideas relevant to online teaching, working with online learners, and digital education. You can listen to the experts and check their profiles and link to some of their work on our website, www.onlinelearninglegends.com. I'm Mark Nichols, the interviewer in this episode. You'll meet Dr. Mark Milleron in this episode. Mark has been an advocate for online education for 3 decades, and his work has been on the leading edge of educational possibility. He's dedicated to using technology on purpose and has received several accolades for his work. I'm talking with Dr. Mark Milleron, who is a consultant and senior vice president and executive dean of the Teachers College at Western Governors University. Mark is in the United States Distance Learning Association's Hall of Fame. He's been chosen by the Chronicle of Higher Education as one of the top technology innovators in higher education. And in 2018, Mark was listed by EdTech Digest as one of the top influencers in the education technology field. Mark, it's really good to be talking with you.
Glad to be with you.
Great. Thanks, Mark. Can we get underway with a brief overview of your career and publications?
I've been causing good trouble in the world of online learning and education in general, coming into my third decade. The through line in my work has always been around trying to help more and more diverse students be more successful on education pathways. And technology is one of the means to that end, right? So I've been a core advocate for the use of internet technologies and eventually online learning and advanced digital learning for a long time. In fact, the early part of my career was around trying to help educators understand that the internet was a thing, that they were going to be using it. And then it was around how we use it most effectively. Mm-hmm. And that were the early days of online learning, which was full of a lot of hyperbole and a lot of kind of interesting prognostications about where we were going. But I think the through line in my work has been around how we help education understand that we need to learn about technology, we need to learn with technology, our students need to learn with technology, but they also then need to learn beyond technology to kind of approach it in a more balanced way. So my early work was around helping educators understand how they make connections with online learning, how they connect students to content, to context, and to community. And you can leverage online tools for all three of those kind of C's. Then it was actually did a number of publications and kind of advocacy pieces around education in a digital democracy. And this was back in 2001. And then the idea of once the digital stream started coming through, how you can then start using the data coming out of online learning to help get more precise about how you teach and reach students and learn from it and kind of use human learning science. So I did a lot of work with analytics, actually led the education and medical practice at SAS, one of the largest analytics providers in the world. And we did some of the early work on creating analytic layers with learning and figuring out especially how you can use the signal that comes out of online learning to understand when people are on track and off track and give them more support. Did more of that work, especially when I was at the League for Innovation in the Community College, which is a large international association. I was the president there. We worked with about 13 different countries. And we did a lot of work. In fact, we led one of the largest technology conferences in higher education. We had keynotes like John Morgridge and Bill Gates and others talking about how you could weave this into the kind of larger education strategies. And then I went to the Gates Foundation and was the deputy director of their student success initiative, their post-secondary success initiative. And while I was there, championed the work of the Next Generation Learning Challenges, which is literally a kind of $100 million grant with EDUCAUSE, League for Innovation, iNicol, which was catalyzing kind of innovations in the use of digital technologies to improve learning. We launched a big initiative around courseware, kind of next generation online courseware, and then, of course, did a lot of the major work around analytics. And then I helped found a company called Civitas Learning, which is probably the earliest and one of the most progressive advanced analytics for student success players out there that really kind of looked at how you could pull your data from your ERP, your CRM, your LMS together and create data that would go right to students and help folks drive forward. And that brings you forward to today where I'm with Western Governors University. I've been with Western Governors University off and on for a long time. I was an early trustee when they were a founding university. Yeah. Which was created by the 19 Western governors to look at how you can use online learning to actually reach people who are underserved, but also to champion competency-based learning or learning-centered progression as opposed to time and bureaucracy-centered education. It was really crazy idea in the beginning, and now it is very mainstream, and we're one of the largest universities in the United States, about 130,000 students in all 50 states, and I lead the largest college of education in the United States. Our college is about 33,000 students in all 50 states. We've had 50,000 graduates in the last 15 years, and we're totally focused on leveraging the best of online and blended to help train teachers, educate leaders, and also innovators in the education space. Having a lot of fun in that work. So I've published 8 books, well over 100 articles, and deep in this work on research and presenting all over the world on really advocating the use of technology. But the last thing I'll say, Mark, is the through line of my work has been putting technology on purpose, making sure it's never technology for technology's sake, moving away from this idea that technology can improve learning. I think technology used well under the right conditions with the right purpose in mind can absolutely improve learning. Used ineffectively could actually get in the way of learning in pretty profound ways. And so for me, my advocacy of online learning has always been about how we're better with it as one of the arrows in our quiver, not that it's better than anything else.
Excellent. Yeah, very, very good response there, Mark. Clearly, you've been very busy over the last 3 decades. And
either that or I can't keep a job, one of the others, right?
It's very interesting, too, though, to just learn about the different avenues you've been exploring. So from the internet as content, context, and community into the field of analytics, and then, I guess, through Western governors, but also probably just as a part of your general approach to things, broadening educational opportunities for people. Can you talk about some of the ideas and themes your work has provided that you sense are still pertinent today? So 30 years is a long track record. What's still relevant as we talk today?
You know, what's really interesting is I think the biggest ones, especially coming out of the pandemic, is the idea that, because I think in the early days of the pandemic, people conflated the emergency remote learning that people were deploying with the 20 years of expertise that people had developed in the use of digital tools. Yeah. And that's the equivalent of equating a life raft with a luxury liner. They both float, but they're very different things. And I think now people are realizing that there was a lot we can learn from the WGUs, the Western Governors, the ASUs, the University of Central Florida's, the open universities in the UK, just all around people who've been doing this for a long time, that we should now figure out how we can use more broadly, especially as the pandemic has continued. And then, like a lot of really interesting work that happened from newbies of who've suddenly been exposed to these tools or who are now realizing the power of it. And I think it's been fascinating, Mark, to tell you the truth, to see kind of all that is old become new again, because suddenly you had these, something I thought was settled about 10 years ago, 15 years ago. I wrote a piece for the Chronicle of Higher Education called Time to End the Family Feud. And the argument was we have to get beyond the which is better online or on ground. It's just a useless argument because, first of all, the teacher effect is so large. Whoever the teacher is can almost overcome any modality. It has to do with instructional design. It has to do with the needs of the learner. And we're really better off with, not better than, these better than arguments. Well, we suddenly, once the pandemic hit, we had all these people saying, oh, this online stuff is terrible. We have to get everybody back into the classroom as fast as possible. Then after a few months, people are like, hey, we kind of like this. We like this different way of assessment. We're probably never going to go back to doing it just the way we were doing it before. We're going to blend these together. And that was an argument people were making 10 years ago. So it's really relevant, again, today, this idea of better with. I also think the idea of people realizing that they can connect learners with all kinds of resources. There are millions of courses online, big. Yeah. International repositories like oercommons.org, which is the largest digital public library of content on the planet, and unbelievable resources at educators' fingertips. And now people are realizing, wow, we can connect learners no matter where they are with phenomenal content and figure out how they learn and go forward. Mm-hmm. So I think so much of that is still relevant today. And I think now people are beginning to move in more interesting ways, like Western governors with competency-based learning. But there's for example, there's an initiative in the United States called Mastery Transcript Consortium. And the idea of the Mastery Transcript Consortium is to kind of break, stop the grading transcript to be the ultimate artifact of learning, the marks or whatever you want to call it. Yeah. And it has been transformative for a number of schools, because the idea is that you take that away and you suddenly be able to, you start mapping learning in a broader and deeper way. You get kind of rid of the ceiling effect. You create kind of a fuller, richer story about how people are learning and progressing. And you suddenly can use tools like online learning in more and more in interesting ways. Finally, I would say, you know, for today, people are realizing, again, because we now have more data than ever before coming from these learning journeys that students are on, we can now be more thoughtful about, one, our assessments, right? So we can start using more formative assessments as opposed to these brutal kind of one-time high-stakes summative assessments.
Yeah.
And we can guide learners and develop them as opposed to punish them and scare them, right, with the high-stakes testing. And then finally, we can do deeper, richer analysis, impact analysis on our interventions and on our outreach. And for example, I think people are really learning that, you know, automated early warning systems are a disaster, but doing kind of, you know, if you have the right kind of data triggered celebrations where you kind of celebrate kind of micro successes of students along the way, really good things happen. So I think there's a lot of learning that's going to happen and that is happening, and I'm pretty excited about that.
Mm. So, Mark, it sounds as though your work started out pretty much as advocacy, then moving on to some orientation towards online learning, exploring some more innovative sides in terms of analytics. What's the major emphasis of your work now?
Biggest thing now is how you use online learning to improve access to opportunity for students. Then as you're improving that access to opportunity, how do you help them become more successful on that pathway? So how do you inform, supercharge the learning so they get deeper learning, but at the same time, you're using those tools to overcome access barriers. So if they're a rural student or if they're a disadvantaged student in the inner city or whatever it might be, that you suddenly create new pathways for them to be able to access the resources and then be able to succeed as they're moving through. So for me, a lot of this work right now is about reaching people where they are and helping take them to where they need to go and to learn incredibly well along the way.
Excellent. Well, Marcus, it's now 2021 and you've pointed out already the impact that COVID has had and the emergency remote teaching that's led to. What are your observations about online learning and education in general at the present time?
It's a powerful moment. I just wrote a piece for Change, the magazine for higher learning in the United States. Mm-hmm. It's a Taylor and Francis publication. It comes out probably this week, but that journal edition is powerful. It's got a piece by Sarah Goldrick-Rabb, who's kind of one of the best basic need researchers in the country, from Arizona State University, Lev Gonick, Sally Johnstone from NCHEM. So a lot of the kind of rock stars of online learning and digital learning have jumped in to talk about how we've met this moment, right? And my opening piece was really about confronting conflation, about learning from the innovators, and then especially around this notion of what do we bring forward. To me, I think that's one of the most interesting things post-pandemic is, what are we going to bring forward? What from this have we learned enough about to realize we're never going back? We're never going to go back to this kind of, you know, segregated world of on-ground over here and online over here. And we're realizing now that we're going to be doing things very differently. I mean, simple things like doctor's appointments and going to the Department of Motor Vehicles in the United States has suddenly been eye-opening, because it's far more efficient doing it using digital tools and parking lots and handhelds. And now people are realizing, oh, we should be, I'm never going to go back to the, you know, the old cattle cars and turnstiles as it used to be. That's the same kind of thing that's happening in the learning world right now. I think people are realizing, what are we going to bring forward? How are we going to maestro this together? And to me, that's the real thing, is how can we curate the most amazing learning experience for students that allow them to do deep learning, co-curricular, build relationships with each other, get on a trajectory for better career pathing? That's pretty powerful. So, for example, we're doing some great work with Western Governors University with the Open Skills Network, which is kind of breaking down learning, especially with the digital tools we have. You can break it down into basically micro skills, and you can actually create these skills architectures to understand the skills you need for different career paths. So you can start mapping your learning more directly onto the needed skill paths for those different occupations and creating some career compassing early in your educational experiences. Mm-hmm. That's intriguing. So I'm pretty excited about the possibilities. The Open Skills Network is, for folks who are listening, it's worth checking out. Big, you know, big companies and some of the big innovators in the online space are playing a part in it.
Excellent. We'll have to link to that one. So, Mark, now that we've got emergency remote teaching underway, and as you've sensed, people are viewing education differently, online education differently, do you think people will go back to those campuses? Do you think education will remain the same, that things will eventually level out back to what they were?
The leveling out's the term I would probably avoid. I think, you know, one of the things I've always told people is, like, don't kid yourself. I remember in the early days, I was I did a congressional testimony in 2000. And before that, I had done a testimony to the Ohio Board of Higher Education. And in that, I was surrounded by some of the innovators. And back then, I was a young gun, right? I think I was in my late 20s, or maybe at most 30. And I think they brought me to be the kind of iconoclast, but I was far from it at the time. And there was one other guy with me named Steve Gilbert, who was the head of Pew Charitable Trust's TLT program, which is a teaching, learning, and technology program. Yeah. And he and I were the only ones who were basically saying, we were surrounded by hyperbolists, and the people who are testifying us were basically saying, everything in the world will be online in 10 years. Like 90% of all learning will be online. You've got to just throw everything else out. And I remember sitting there going, this is crazy. That's not what's going to happen. It's probably going to be a bell curve. You're going to have some people on the extreme who are going to only want face-to-face. Some people on the other extreme who are going to only want online. Some of that is wants. Some of that is needs, right? Yep. They have certain needs, and that's how they get it. Most of it will be this big, messy in the middle part. Well, and that's kind of where we ended up, where, you know, 90% of in-class experiences were scaffolded with LMSs, right? You know, all different kinds of kind of blends. I think we're going to go back to probably a deeper blend now, because we had this mass orientation to digital tools. I think now that everybody has all this experience with Zoom and Teams and Google and Skype, they now realize, oh, we could be doing all kinds of different things with everything from office hours to co-curricular connections with experts. We could actually get, you know, teams of students meeting from different universities and community colleges and further education institutions at all different kinds of ways. And I think our eyes are open to the possibilities now. So I don't ever think we're going to return to kind of like the status quo, whatever you want to call that. But I do think you are going to have people at certain stages of their life who are going to want campus-based experiences. You're going to have other people who, because they're working or because they're where they are remotely, they need purely online experiences. And then you're going to have everything in between.
Great. So you see a broadening of educational options as a result of everything we're going through now. Plus also, I guess, the trajectory that's been building up over the last 30 years or so.
I do think that. I also think people are going to want to get back to work. And because people are going to want to get back to work, you're going to have a lot of people, because of economic panic or because of economic need or just because they've learned they can do it this way. I think you're going to have a push for probably more models that are working student friendly. We're going to have more students that want to work while they learn. And I think that learn and earn model is going to be pretty attractive to a lot of folks. That's going to challenge some educational institutions, because they very much want people to stop their lives, come learn with them, and then go back to their lives. And that model is, I think, you know, outside of the 18 to 23-year-old, I think you're going to see more and more people realizing that they probably want to have educational models that are allowing for learning and earning and transitioning careers and advancing in different ways.
Mark, let me put you in a hypothetical situation. You've grabbed a journal, you've opened up the pages, and you've found the perfect article. What's it about and what does it say? So what's the research you'd most like to see?
You know what I really love? You know, in fact, we just published an article in one of the journals for Arizona State University for their College of Education about impact analysis on pathways for students. I've wrote it with David Kill and Angela Baldessari. Angela was a phenomenal scholar with the University of Arizona, joined Civitas, and David Kill is the chief data scientist for there. And that impact analysis is really around the things people have done to help the pathways students are on. So studying advising, studying co-curricular support, studying everything from clubs to early warning systems and all that kind of larger work. And part of this, I would call, that is the use of what I would call pathway analytics, studying the pathway students are on, how to use analytics to help them get on the right path, how do you help them stay on the path, how do you help them graduate, how do you help them career navigate. Those pathway analytics are deeply interesting to me. But there's a whole other thread of analytics work that is led by people like George Siemens and Dragan Gasevich and others. And that's the kind of SOLAR, right? The Society of Learning Analytics Research work. And that learning analytics research tends to be very focused on the learning moment, helping, like, what helps this learner master this concept and go to this and go to this. I think there's a huge gap between the pathway analytics and the learning analytics. And to me, I think there's a huge opportunity to say, how can we bring the insight from our pathway analytics into that learning moment, right? Where I can better inform that learning moment. It's not just, you know, it's learning analytics with deep and rich context for who that student is and where they're going. And also, you know, kind of bringing it down to that moment where you find those big sticking points, those big elements where like things that you could help somebody overcome some of the biggest challenges they might have. To me, that would be intriguing. I think trying to get pathway analytics and true learning analytics side by side and doing some interaction and exchange work would be kind of fun.
That sounds fantastic. And you're doing some work along those lines yourself at the moment.
Trying to.
Mark, let's finish with two people you'd recommend as leaders or legends of online learning, one whose work or perspective is significantly influencing you now, and one who you think otherwise might have an important perspective to share.
You know, there's so many of them. I think, you know, you've had some on your podcast, like George Siemens and others. I think I'm a big fan of the early work. You know, Sally Johnstone actually wrote one of the original treatises that began, that actually created Western Governors University. She was so far ahead of the game in terms of how to use online learning. She just has great perspective. She's the president of NSHEMS now, which is one of the big policy organizations in the United States. Darcy Hardy founded the UT Telecampus, which the name tells you how far back she goes. And she was an early advocate of the strategic use of online learning. She's in the Hall of Fame for USDLA. She was, I think, one of the big advisors for the multi-billion-dollar TACTA grant with the Obama administration, which used online learning to help get people back to work after the Great Recession. So those are the kind of like rock stars who've done phenomenal work. I think going forward, there's some interesting new voices out there. And I got to tell you, I love our president at Western Governors, Scott Pulsifer. And Scott's interesting. He's not really a researcher, but he's an advocate. Mm-hmm. And he comes from Amazon, and he has really brought his insight in how do you bring that kind of Amazon scale and deep unit economics to understand how can you radically reduce costs and increase the student success outcomes for students. And I'm just blown away by his mind, like how he is able, and without using a business metaphor, it really is about using analytics, scale, insight to improve student outcomes but radically reduce costs. I think that's fascinating, right? Pulling those levers. And I think those kind of operational model analytics are going to be really important from the policy and practice side in the coming years and months.
Absolutely. So some true pioneers there. Mark, it's been absolutely fascinating learning from you. Thank you for the fantastic work you're doing, and congratulations on being a leader and legend of online learning.
Thanks, Mark. I enjoyed being in this conversation, and let me know if I can help you cause good trouble on the road ahead.
You can learn more about Mark and his work from our website. That concludes this episode. Be sure to go to our website, www.onlinelearninglegends.com, to follow up on this episode's guest. You'll also find links to others whose ideas continue to inspire and teach online learning professionals, and you can subscribe to future interviews. If you know of a leader or legend we've not yet talked to, please do drop us a line at onlinelearninglegends@gmail.com.